On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Governor Tony Evers signed an executive order in February establishing a task force on caregiving. And now more than two dozen people are involved in this group. They're trying to address worker shortages. They're looking at supporting services for families. And we're checking in on the group's work. What aspects of caregiving need to be addressed first? How do you want to see caregivers compensated? We're at 800-642-1234. Todd Costello is co-chair of the Governor's Caregivers Task Force. He's executive director of the Community Living Alliance, and he's president-elect of the Wisconsin Personal Services Organization. Todd, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you.
So the Caregivers Task Force, they met to talk about how to look at the caregiver shortage in Wisconsin. That happened last Wednesday. One of the key areas that looks like is compensation. What is the plan from this task force, from this group?
Well, I think that we are very fortunate to have such experience and expertise on the task force and incredible stakeholders that are very passionate about this issue. And obviously, when we look at the current workforce crisis, there are many contributing factors. And I think low wages, unfortunately, is one of them. And I believe this will be certainly a priority as we look at how we can truly demonstrate value, the value that this workforce brings to the long-term care system. And so we'll be looking at opportunities to improve wages, provide benefits, and other types of employment perks that everyone who is employed really wants to have part of their work experience and to support a living wage.
Well, when you look at wages for caregivers, what are they? What does that look like?
Well, I think that the wages vary, but the median hourly wage for home care workers in Wisconsin is currently about $10.47. Of course, there's variation depending on where you may be located. Looking at rural communities in the northern region of our state, you may find lower wages, and then in urban centers, they may be considerably higher. But when you look at the 1047, obviously that is not really able to support people to pay their rent or their mortgages or car payment or daycare. And these are some of the true barriers that I believe contribute to this current workforce crisis.
So why is pay so low when we see demand so high for, you know, as long-term care keeps rising?
Well, I think when you look at state Medicaid, long-term care services is really one of the commitments is creating this community-based support, as well as supporting folks in facilities. But many of our providers, for example, in the Wisconsin Personal Services Association, Medicaid represents close to 90% of their revenue. And so the rates are really set by the department. And so there's little leverage that providers often have in supporting or increasing these wages. And as we look at this classic economic supply and demand, the need, as you mentioned, it far exceeds what the current supply is there. And so we're really looking at how we can close that gap and add value. I think that, you know, there's a couple other reasons. I think that the workforce is representative of women and people of color and individuals who have been marginalized to some extent. And I think as we look at how we can address the whole workforce crisis, I believe that we really need to look at equity and all those contributing factors.
We're talking with Todd Costello. He's co-chair of the caregiving task force that was formed in a directive by Governor Evers earlier this year. Do you currently serve as a caregiver? How has that role affected other parts of your life? And what policies could be enacted to better support you? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Todd, you were saying earlier about Medicaid and the shortfalls of Medicaid, the role of a low Medicaid reimbursement rate. How is the task force taking Medicaid into consideration then as it looks for solutions?
Well, I think that that is one of our key charges. I mean, there within the Executive Order 11, there are several, and looking at how we can address the shortfall within Medicaid and make the numbers work. I think that we will be working with this talented group and the as I mentioned, just the wide range of interest within the group. And we have providers, we have individuals who receive these services, we have family members, we have tremendous support from DHS and DWD and looking at providing data for us to examine, and we will continue to really dive deep. I think we're looking at best practices and evidence-based opportunities, looking at what other states are doing and how, if any of those are things that we would want to consider and replicate for the state of Wisconsin. And we recognize that, as I had said earlier, the demand is such and resources are limited. And when you look at the budget process, obviously, I think this year's biennial budget was incredible in terms of the commitment that the governor made to this issue.
A step forward.
And so I think that we want to be good stewards of those funds. I mean, it was a considerable increase. And so we want to make sure that we can impact this issue, that we can actually improve the wages of the direct care workforce. And more importantly, you know, it's really about the individuals who rely on these services and family caregivers. I think that's another component of this issue is the workforce crisis is really pushing many family caregivers to miss work, to and really provide those services and to step in.
Well, let's pause right here and bring in Dave in Milwaukee with thoughts on this. Dave, hi.
Good morning to both of you. I think this is such an essential issue. I am a caregiver. I am in Milwaukee. And I want to ask, how are we going to, I do agree Medicaid is racist in the way that they don't pay to us, and we are almost all of color, and I wanted to know, how are we going to make Medicaid less racist and get this money? Because this job is nasty sometimes, and it's long hours, and there, you know, it is a mess.
Dave, how long have you been a caregiver?
13 years.
And do you see yourself getting raises at all, or has your wage stagnated?
Oh, no, this Medicaid, they pay... they don't even give you any raise. It's, sometimes it goes down. And I don't know if the gentleman knows this or not, but if a lot of these people are so housebound and what have you that, you know, we're working a lot more hours to help them use the toilet, to help them clean themselves, etc. And so for me, 13 years of doing this work, and I just think that the Medicaid is racist. If this was, if I was a white farmer or a trucker or something like that, they don't pay me no $10 an hour. Why is a trucker? Just want things to be equal.
And we're hearing a story from Dave in Milwaukee on life as a caregiver. You can join in 800-642-1234 as we talk with Todd Costello, who co-chairs the governor's task force on caregiving. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about caregivers here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The governor commissioned a task force earlier this year to better support family caregiving. According to AARP, there are more than a half million family caregivers here in Wisconsin. The task force has met, drafted priorities. We're learning about them, hearing your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you work at a skilled nursing facility? What are your challenges on the job? Were you previously a caregiver but had to leave the profession? What was difficult about the role? Join in at 800-642-1234. Todd Costello stays with us. He co-chairs the governor's task force on caregiving. Todd, State Senator Kathy Bernier, who is on the task force with you, said last month that conversations shouldn't just be about money. They should encompass a look at how long-term care is provided. Where do you see room for improvement when it comes to the quality of care?
Obviously, training. I think that's a very important issue. The work is complicated. It's rewarding, but challenging. And I think that when you look at the variety of settings in which this work occurs, there are certainly folks that work in facilities, but when you look at the community-based workforce, often there's a lot of autonomy, which is wonderful as part of a job experience, but it can also lead to isolation. And so finding ways to really engage with this workforce, to let them know that we support them, we have their back, we want to make sure that they have the skills to be successful and the tools to do the job. And so I believe there's actually a real opportunity to positively impact training and looking at consistently training throughout the state. I think it has unfortunately been one of the criticisms just nationally that there's been such variation in training standards. And I think that that's definitely an area that we can impact.
Sandra emailed to say, in addition to better wages, one of the benefits that should be provided is disability benefits, because Sandra says, we all know it's a matter of time before we get hurt on the job. Disability benefits alone are not enough when you need immediate funding assistance after an injury. What can you say there?
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that there are needs for health insurance, short-term disability, and again, all the things that typical employees expect. And so I think these are all areas that we will be looking at. Obviously, you know, one of the charges is to really look at accessing compensation and fringe benefits for caregivers, including ways to make healthcare affordable for this caregiving workforce through employer-sponsored plans, Medicaid buy-in plans, or other health insurance coverage options. So this will clearly be an area that the task force will be addressing.
As we see, some nursing homes have been closing. They don't have the staff. They're not, staying in the black with their budgets. And at the same time, Wisconsin is seeing this aging population. There is the demand. What is happening to these residents and who might not otherwise have anywhere else to go?
Well, I think that that's one of the true hardships of this story. I think that we're looking at nursing homes that aren't able to have adequate staff. We're looking at agencies, really having to tell individuals when they call for these services that they just do not have the workforce to serve them. And so that is the real heart of this story, is that there are people, there are citizens of our state who are going, unfortunately, without the support that they need to have a life that is, for allowing them to pursue their own well-being and to live with dignity. And I think that is one of the driving forces, if not the most important, of why this task force is in existence. It's really looking at how we can ensure that we will have adequate services to support our aging and disability communities.
We're talking with Todd Costello. He co-chairs the governor's task force on caregiving. He's also president-elect of the Wisconsin Personal Services Association. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a family caregiver? What kind of support would make the work easier for you? What support services do you need? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Todd, there are 29 members on this task force. They come from all different walks of life into the looking at the situation around caregivers. Do you find, after meeting together, are you all on the same page?
Absolutely. I think even though we have a very diverse group who really add to the richness of this task force. I think that we have, as I mentioned, representation from parents, family caregivers. We have representation from the nursing home industry. We have advocates. And so I think that as we went around the room on our first meeting last week, I was completely in awe of just the passion and the commitment and the level of expertise and personal experience that this group brings together. And I think our task will be to harness that and to be inclusive and to ensure that everyone has a voice around the table. And in addition to that, we are also seeking content experts within our community. And so we're finding ways to also educate this group and to have us have a shared understanding of what the issues are and what some of the resources and potential solutions may be.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the state budget increased funding for personal care services by $91 million. Personal care services allow people to remain in their homes. And your organization, the Community Living Alliance, the nonprofit, provides this kind of help. How do you want to see this money put to work?
Well, I think obviously we want to improve the wages for this workforce. We want to look at how we can also invest in technology. When you look at a remote workforce, there are certain challenges. And so everything that I look at regarding employment these days and what prudent companies are doing, it's really about engagement with your workforce and to have that connection. And as I mentioned earlier, that our workers are in the community. And so how can we connect with them? How can we give them the support? And so we're very excited about looking into technology, but most importantly, it's really looking at creative ways in which we can demonstrate value. For example, recently our board, through some of our fundraising, we were able to implement a bereavement stipend. The relationships between personal care workers and clients is so rich, and so Unfortunately, when a client passes away, that can sometimes mean loss of wages for individuals. And because we value that relationship, we just thought there's got to be a way to really support our workforce. And so we have implemented, actually beginning today, or actually October 1st, a benefit that will provide a stipend for our workers when one of their clients passes away so they can get a day off, so they can grieve. But more importantly, I think it's a way to really acknowledge just the strength and what and how meaningful that relationship is.
Many people who are currently caring for family members, they're not getting paid for it. Is the task force looking at how to provide financial support for family caregivers who do this every day?
I believe we will be looking at how we can support family caregivers through respite. Family caregivers currently, if they choose, can be employed. For example, our agency hires family caregivers. We have family members who feel very strongly about that they are actually in the best position to provide that care. And so We are looking at ways to encourage more family caregivers to join our workforce. I think, again, you know, the wages are not what they should be or can be. And so we are looking at other incentives. There's some creative things happening. We'll be looking at how policy might perhaps be able to support this workforce, looking at tax credits and other kinds of initiatives that may make this work and the impact on families.
And very quickly, Todd, the next meeting for the task force is October 25th. What do you want to accomplish at the next meeting?
Well, I think our first two meetings is really looking at data, looking at best practices. We want to establish work groups because, as you mentioned, we're 29 strong individuals. And so being able to achieve really all of the expectations of the governor's order, that we felt that it would be helpful to break up into smaller work groups.
Todd, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Todd, thank you.
Todd Costello is co-chair of the Governor's Task Force on Caregiving. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. News is next. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do stay with us after 9 for On Point. The Washington Post's White House bureau chief, Philip Rucker, brings us the latest on the whistleblower, the president, the Democrats' next move on the impeachment inquiry. It's all coming up after 9 here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about a letter drafted by the Wisconsin League of Municipalities that is putting pressure on the governor, putting pressure on lawmakers to act on gun safety legislation. It was signed by nearly 200 local leaders from across the state. What questions do you have about gun policy proposals that are being talked about? What changes would you like to see in your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Kathy Eli is mayor of Wauwatosa. She is on the board of directors for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and that's a statewide advocacy organization representing hundreds of cities and villages. Mayor Eli, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why is the League of Wisconsin Municipalities calling for a mass violence reform right now? Why this letter right now?
Well, often we've had so many tragedies over the last number of years, 250 so far this year, and there always seems to be an emotional response after a mass shooting or a gun-related tragedy. And we felt it would be best to bring this up when we weren't in that heat of emotion and the emotional aftermath. We really feel strongly the purview of gun regulation and solutions it sits with our state legislature. So we felt it was best at this point to come forward and put the letter out to our membership and said, are you interested in signing? And the response was, as you can see, quite an incredible response from municipalities all over the state.
Yeah, when you reached out to municipalities on and getting on board on this letter, signing it, what type of reception did you have? Because, you know, there are nearly 200 people who have signed on to this letter, but they're not all municipalities, and you represent hundreds of cities and villages.
We have, we represent 419 villages and 190 cities. There are over, I think it's about 140 municipalities that signed on to the letter. It was, we have not circulated it again to see if more people want to sign on, but there was no pushback from anyone saying, we don't want you to do this, we don't want to do this. It was an immediate response by the people who did sign on to the letter.
The letter from the League, it was also signed by Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who spoke on the need for solutions at a press conference last week.
We're looking for solutions that are going to fit Beaver Dam, They're going to fit Wauwatosa. They're going to fit Green Bay, Milwaukee, all parts of the state.
So he seems to be saying there that the legislation really has to not just be targeted at big cities, but has to work for small communities as well. What does that look like then?
Well, that's really what we we're asking the legislature to come up with solutions and not deal with this as a partisan issue or a rural versus urban issue. This really is more than, you know, people focus on gun regulation and then it becomes a very emotional partisan issue. This is a public health issue. This is something our first responders and local municipalities are the ones who have to respond to this. We need to have their input. We need to have public health officials' input. We need the communities all throughout the state having input on this. As I've worked on league issues and gotten to know leaders throughout the state, all sizes of community, what we've identified and what we focus on are the things that we have in common, that we can work together to find solutions that better all of our communities. That's what we're asking for here.
We're talking with the mayor of Wauwatosa, Kathy Eli, about the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, which sent a letter last week to the governor, to lawmakers, calling for gun safety legislation to move ahead. You can join in here. What do you think about community leaders calling on lawmakers for action on mass violence, on guns? Do you have a hope or a solution that would come from this? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Mayor, last week the Wisconsin League of Municipalities said that Wisconsin Act 143 is a good starting point to address mass violence. What is Act 143?
Well, Act 143 was enacted after the Florida high school shooting, and it set aside responses for resources for training schools and helping collaborations on how to deal with increased safety in schools. And so what we're saying is those same types of things are important for all community spaces, not just for schools. We have a lot of community gathering spaces, both in private buildings and public buildings. And that's what we're encouraging, similar things, not just focused on schools.
What did you see in this legislation that changed for our state? What was the, you know, what was a turning point here about this legislation?
The Act 143?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it was some action. It at least was identifying the need for increased resources. And that's we're just suggesting that type of thing needs to be done for the entire state, not just for schools.
Mayor Eli, what is it like on the ground in Wauwatosa as you look at gun violence, as you look at firearms? What do you notice in Wauwatosa?
Well, this is an issue that doesn't stay within municipal boundaries, and so there's always a ripple effect whenever it happens elsewhere. Since I've been mayor, our first responders have responded to the Oak Creek shooting at the Sikh temple.
In 2012.
In 2012. And I believe it was the same year our first responders were first on the scene for a shooting in the Azana Salon in Brookfield. We've been there to help with things that it's a collaborative response in the area of all of our first responders. And they need more training as well, more resources in dealing with this, not just for the incident, but for the challenges, the mental well-being afterwards. I mean, this is becoming a mental health issue as well as an issue of resources in our first responders.
Mayor Eli, do you see small villages, small cities being left behind in the model for going forward with funding, with rolling out proposals? Do we keep in mind our villages?
I believe we do, and that is the strength of the League of Municipalities, is that we work very hard to get in point input from all the different municipalities, no matter what their size. Now, the reality is the municipalities have been under increasing restrictions from state legislation on how they can fund the services needed, and small communities are suffering. We have over 100 municipalities, smaller municipalities in the state of Wisconsin that have not had a funding increase to provide the services in over 10 years. So there's increasing challenge for the smaller communities to be able to deal with these types of things and safety issues.
Well, let's take a call now. Dwayne joining us from Weston. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, good morning. You know, I don't know if this is on the right path you guys are leading toward, but when I was in the military, when you went to your new base, you had to watch, they would make you watch videos of car accidents, and they were getting at drunken driving and the catastrophic effects it would have on these actions. And, you know, if these people can only realize the lives they're ruining, not of just the family or gun violence, but of the friends and relatives, and you know, if it would be something where they could just show clips of, I mean, to be blunt, of funerals and of the grieving families and just something like that, you know, that I don't think people realize their actions until it's done, you know. They may play these games on videos with, like, you know, these war videos where they're just shooting everybody at will.
So, Dwayne, you're really looking for more educational processes, a way to get to younger people and all people to educate what happens.
Yeah.
What do you see along that vein, Kathy Eli?
Well, I feel very strongly that we need to be doing more things that are proactive and preventative. His point is well taken, and I really think that this goes into early childhood development, dealing with trauma from early childhood, helping young people learn how to deal with stress and anger management, finding productive ways of dealing when they feel angry, because all of this develops your personality on how do you react to things later in life. And so this isn't, I don't think we're looking at this just being a gun restriction type thing. That is not the point of what the league is saying. We're saying this really needs some very thoughtful, in-depth discussion, commitment to implementing different things from different perspectives.
We're talking with Wauwatosa's Mayor Kathy Eli about a letter published last week signed by nearly 200 local leaders around the state calling for the governor and lawmakers to move forward on gun safety bills. What do you think about community leaders calling on lawmakers for action? Will it move the needle? 800-642-1234. You can join in. There's more State Cap in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Municipal leaders from across the state have signed on to a letter that calls on state elected leaders to take action on gun safety measures. And that letter is from the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. It was released last week in Oak Creek, and that is where a mass shooting at the Sikh temple took place in 2012. Do you support expanded or universal background checks for gun purchases? Do you support red flag laws, or do you think they violate due process? Join in at 800-642-1234. Wauwatosa Mayor Kathy Eli signed on to the letter. She's a board member for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and she stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Dave is joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I just want to make the comment that I think there's a portion of the state statutes that should be maybe reevaluated involving new gun stores. The X67 that was kind of quietly passed in 2017 tightened up the definition for substantial evidence that cities can use to deny conditional use permits for new gun stores. And as a result, cities now have more difficulty in denying new permits for new gun stores. And I think that's something that should be reevaluated for potential revision of that law.
Dave, thanks for the call. Mayor, what is your response there to a portion of the Wisconsin statute on conditional use for permits?
Well, we have experienced, as local municipalities, we have experienced increased state legislation that limits local municipalities' decision making. And I think this is an increasing concern for the municipalities that are members of the league. We find it very frustrating that we are the ones on the front line, that our residents want us to come up with solutions. They want us to be able to govern our municipality, but we have many things like X67 that limit our ability to do that.
So from your perspective, what were some of the reasons why some municipalities did not sign on to this letter?
Kate, I haven't spoken to the leaders who have not signed on, but after the press release, I did speak with our executive director for the league and suggest that we reach out again, because often I know myself, this is budget time for local municipalities. I have emails that I don't get to in a timely basis right now because of that. So it could very well be that for some of the leaders, they were just extremely busy on their immediate priorities. And so we want to give them an opportunity, reach out again and say, who else would like to join in on this? And we're continuing to think of ways that we can collaborate with others, like reaching out to the Wisconsin Police Chiefs Association and see how we can find common things to work on together for helping to contribute to this conversation of finding solutions.
We spoke about red flag laws on our show with the leader of the 80% coalition recently, Daryl Morin, and it's a group that supports expanded background checks on guns. Mm-hmm. The head of the coalition, Daryl Morin, discussed the need for a resolution to condemn recent acts of domestic terrorism.
When you see these acts, act after act, where the perpetrators have admitted why they did what they did, we think it gives our lawmakers an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to stand up for American principles. We're going to state that loudly. There's no place for hate in Wisconsin. There's no place for hate in our country.
So as you listen to that, how should our state leaders address domestic terrorism?
Well, right now, the point of our letter is that we're not making any solutions, and we're not going to advocate for any solution at this point, because what seems to happen is when someone comes up with an idea, the first reaction is to attack it and to say why it's not good or why it's infringing on people's rights. Let's get together in a collective and figure out where are the common things that we can do, no matter what part of the political spectrum you're on, to start dealing with this issue and not just look at the superficial, the surface issue, but really go down what is causing this epidemic. That's what we have to be focusing on, with a commitment to come up with a lot of different things that will help, that we can implement, not just talk about this.
Yeah, a lot of different things. So it sounds like you're saying everything should be on the table, not just things that have been in news headlines like red flag laws and universal background checks, that there's more out there.
Absolutely. And as I said before, I really think we have to be focusing and putting more effort on that early childhood development, on supportive families, dealing with situations before they're such a major problem. I would rather see us spend more money helping young people learn how to function in society than all the money we spend putting in incarceration. I mean, those are the types of things I'm looking for, more proactive early intervention in this.
Mayor Eli, what can communities, municipalities be doing in the meantime as lawmakers continue to debate these bills, debate these gun bills?
What we can do is work with our local residents and encourage them to communicate with their state legislatures, work together as a community. I have a youth commission that I work with on a monthly basis made up of middle school and high school students here in the city. Their primary concern is mental well-being of their peers and suicide prevention.
Let's bring in a call now. Bill in Marinette County. Bill, hi.
Hi there. I was just, you know, there's a lot of this that we could talk about, but just for right now, and I've listened to other people who ask, just could you explain in detail just what a background check entails and what expanded background check means, and if there would be, like under Governor Doyle, there was a fee for your background check that the buyer had to pay, and it started out at $8, and Governor Doyle raised it at least once and tried to raise it again to over $30. And if you could explain what a background check is, just everything that it entails, and what an expanded background check would be, and if there would be fees involved, and if you could just tell us all about the background check. I guess I better let it go at that.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for the call. And Mayor, it sounds like, you know, people too have to understand, just, you know, as we throw out the jargon, what does it really mean and how does it apply to my neighborhood, my community?
Well, that's something that people have to investigate. They have to read the draft of the legislation or talk to their state legislature about what that means. I mean, I can't respond to his question because that's really not what I'm here for today. I don't have details about the particular draft legislation that he's referring to. The league is not focused on one particular solution.
When you consider Wisconsin among the landscape of all of the states out there working on gun legislation, what do you make of our approach to mass violence and what is happening right now?
Well, it feels like there's a lot of talk, but not a comfort to take any action. And it's a very polarizing topic. And that is, I think that's really troublesome for getting things done. I know on the local level, we can't keep just talking about issues. We have our residents expect us to find solutions. And there's usually not one solution that takes care of a problem. It's a lot of little things that have to go into doing that course correction. And I think that's the case with this particular topic as well.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about this.
Kathy Eli is the mayor of Wauwatosa. She's also on the board of directors for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, which is an advocacy organization for Wisconsin cities and villages. Just ahead, we're getting a preview of must-watch TV shows coming out this fall. It's the returning favorites and the hottest shows that will debut. Stay with us after 9, also for On Point, when we get the latest on the impeachment inquiry. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.